Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the 7th episode of FS Talks, the podcast that brings you the latest news and chats with industry leaders every week on Friday mornings. Today's podcast is hosted by myself, Phil Creed. I'm co-founder and director of FSCom, which is a boutique regulatory advisory firm to the financial services industry. Today, we're joined by John Lord. John is founder and CEO of True Narrative. And although I actually haven't met John before, we work with a number of his colleagues at True Narrative, and it's a fairly safe assumption to make that they are definitely one of the most up-and-coming RegTech platforms around. John, great to have you. How are you today?
I'm great, Phil. Thanks for having me. It is a sunny day at last here in North Yorkshire. We don't get a lot of sun in North Yorkshire. To be able to get some sun is making me feel very happy today. So good to talk to you.
Yeah, it definitely helps whenever you're working from home. Being able to nip outside and whatnot. Listen, I wonder for the audience at home, if you would mind introducing yourself in a wee bit more detail. You know, I was having a flick through your LinkedIn and pretty much you've worked for the who's who of individual and corporate data. And I suppose that leads on to why and how you started True Narrative. So maybe if you could give us a bit of your background.
Yeah, I can. Yeah. So my first job, or real job, other than the part-time jobs I did when I was at school, was working for Dun & Bradstreet. So I started at Dun & Bradstreet. I worked through different departments. In those days, data was very different and technology was very different. They were very advanced for the CRAs at the time. Now we would probably laugh at their technology. Yeah. I think my laptop I used to carry around in a trombone case. It was that. It literally
and breaks your back.
And I pulled that my laptop when I was in field sales, and I learned a lot about risk and financial control. And in fact, to the extent where they sent me to night school, university to do a degree in it as well. And which was great because I came from a family I wasn't able to go to university, so it was great that they put me through school, and they taught me a lot about risk and financial control back in the day. I worked for them twice. After that I went to work for a company which is now called EULA, EULA Trade Indemnity at the time, or EULA Hermes as it is now, and worked my way up that business to become the sales director of that business. We were a public company at the time. And then I went into banking for a few years, which was kind of poacher turned gamekeeper. So yeah, all of a sudden I was buying all those services that I'd previously been building or using or selling. And that was really interesting. I ended up in M&A and I went back to DNB because DNB had some big ideas about moving into the consumer credit space. And okay, what a lot of people don't know is that or forget is that it was Dun & Bradstreet that came up with the idea of Cool Credit, the company it's now called TransUnion, based in Leeds. Yeah. And my job was to work with the initial team there to set that business up, which was probably my first step into entrepreneurialism. And from there, I ended up running Dun & Bradstreet in the UK and working for a couple of PE firms. And then the guys that ran Cool Credit gave me a reference to GB Group. And I went to work for GB Group as the group managing director. GB at the time was a very small data business over in Chester, and through acquisition and very strong growth and building some excellent products, we turned it into a global player in the identity risk management space. Whilst I was there, we kind of came across a number of problems, and those problems were around how do customers manage their customers' life cycle. And our solution to that was at GB Group was that we went ahead and bought a load of solutions. We went ahead and bought some companies. I think we acquired 11 in total whilst I was there. And of course, that grew our business and gave the solutions that the customers needed. But the problem still existed that they were just all siloed solutions. And a lot of those products that we bought or companies that we bought were old technology. Yeah. And they didn't talk to each other. And they still probably don't. And I kind of came up with this problem that I could see in the marketplace that false positives would always be a major issue for financial services or regulated businesses if onboarding and transacting with customers didn't become smoother, mm-hmm. didn't become part of a unified risk-rated approach. And I decided that I would partner with my business partner who runs a number of decision science businesses and owns a number of decision science businesses. And before that, payments businesses over in the US. And we decided to set up True Narrative. Brilliant. So that's how I got to where I am today.
So if we're moving on to True Narrative, can you give us sort of your elevator pitch as what the company does and what key problems that you solve for your client?
Sure, yeah. So we are a risk and financial crime platform. So the problems that clients have is that if they're a regulated business, they need to do identity verification, KYC or KYB, some kind of maybe document verification. You need to go through application fraud, which is all about anomaly detection. You need to then, once the customer's on board, conduct ongoing risk assessment, money laundering checks, but ongoing money laundering checks, and also transaction fraud checks. All of that is a flow. And what we do is we solve that problem by making it one process, as opposed mm-hmm. to numerous processes. So it completely takes the friction out of dealing with your customer, and it makes your company a better place for your customers to be transacting with. So it makes you significantly more competitive, but more importantly, it makes you more compliant. Yeah. So our elevator pitch is that we're able to provide one risk and financial crime platform that, if you then need third-party data, is already integrated into our one platform through open API capability, which means that we can integrate into any data source globally, any enrichment source, and normalize that data in a way that enables you to use, let's say, Experian data with Equifax data, with biometrics data, with application or transactional data, all in one flow. And you don't have to do anything with it. It's already normalized. And that means that our platform is one place for the subject matter expert user to be able to just drag and drop, build risk ratings, build rules, build automation to completely orchestrate the customer flow. And from that perspective, we are completely unique.
And do you don't like build data sets yourselves, or is it like?
Well, we will integrate to, and we're integrated into well over 50 different data sets now, and we will pull them together and blend them, because we have this capability and technology that normalizes data. We're able to pull them together and create a super set, if you like. Yeah. And we do that regularly. So if organizations are trying to get 2+2 in a market that's got lots of different data sets that wouldn't even give them a 1+1, we're able to pull them together in one single decision process that would enable a 2+2 for, say, KYC. But we don't own our own data. We are a technology company.
So the benefit to the client is you can use Experian, Equifax, Onfido, whoever, it doesn't really matter. It is managing that journey from customer getting onto your website to getting the data sets that you need to get them on board. Is that fair? So,
And all those people like Equifax, Experian, and even on Fido, although no one uses on Fido via our platform today, they're just endpoint solutions. So, you know, they're biometric solutions or a data solution. And what those businesses often forget is the customer has to do something with that data. They have to risk rate it. They have to enrich it with both the customer application or transactional data. And then they have to score it and make a decision. And if they're going to do that, they're either going to have to build that technology in-house or they're going to have to use something. And that's the gap that we're filling. We're filling that capability of being able to waterfall between different processes that in a way that the customer could never do before and enable them to make very quick decisions with all the best data sources or enrichment sources. But more importantly, it's about the decisioning that we enable. So our platform is a true AI platform because it's driven by both rules optimization and machine learning, and it is true orchestration and automation of a process. And it's so easy to do that the user within the strategy component can just drag and drop. And then if something is referred, we have a full investigation suite and case management suite. So all referrals and cases can be managed within the same portal. So we are managing both the strategy and the referral management. Mm-hmm. And 99% of everything is automated in between.
Yeah. Cool. Listen, we have a number of mutual clients, but again, for the audience watching, could you elaborate on some of the types of clients that you would work with and, sure. and what are some of the most interesting challenges that they face? I assume it's all do it faster, better, quicker.
Yeah, faster, better, quicker is always what they want, but sometimes they also want more compliant. So, yeah. So if we talked about banking, we'll probably split between 50-50 between B2B and B2C. With B2B, we have a full suite of corporate onboarding capabilities. So all of UBO, all of directors, all of company can be automated, risk scored and onboarded. So if we thought about somebody like Borgen, which is a payments company, which is the largest Icelandic bank, they use us for onboarding all of their merchants, and they have automated that whole process with our platform. So they can onboard a new merchant in minutes, whereas most of their competitors would take days, if not weeks, to onboard a merchant, which is enabling them to be really competitive in the market right now. If we thought about people like Atom Bank as a challenger bank, we manage all of their risk rating and AML capability, so all money in and out of the bank accounts. So anything that goes in, anything that comes out is monitored and managed and risk rated. So there's no third party data involved really, other than the sanctions data, but everything in between is managed through the platform and scored for potential behavioral analysis and transaction monitoring purposes. Then if we thought about people like Playtech and Gamesys, they're using us to compliantly onboard their customers. They're in the gambling sector or the gaming sector, and they're using us for compliant onboarding, but they're also using us for behavior monitoring for problem gambling. So and we're identifying patterns of behavior that could be a problem. We're also helping them risk rate all transactions and to enable them to understand what could be money laundering through their sites. So they're using us. Yes, they want to do that quickly. Yes, we can do it quicker than anybody else. But probably more importantly, it's more compliant than any other way of doing it. So other than making the customer wait weeks for a decision or a payout. Some people and some of our customers are using us for the high level of compliance that they get through the platform whilst they appreciate the speed. Others are using it for the fact that they get that high level of compliance, but really they're after the speed and the automation. So generally, if somebody's got 50 people in the back office doing remediation using our platform, would probably mean that they could repurpose 2/3 of those people.
Mm-hmm.
And use them for more important customer-facing tasks.
Yeah. It's a good one. It's like KYC analysts are analysts and not sort of manual, you know, shouldn't be like manually collecting docs and things like that. They should be analyzing the docs that are already there.
Correct.
Totally get that. I read an interesting article, I think it was on your website, actually, about your expansion into the US. I'm always fascinated by people who take the leap to go to the US because it's a similar market but different, right? And I wonder if you could sort of elaborate on your decision to go there and, you know, if you've any nuts of experience that you could share with other people who are thinking that sort of way.
Yeah.
I think it'd be well received.
Yeah, don't do it. you know, as people always joke, you know, different country, similar language. It's not even the same language, it's just similar. So our experience in the US continues to be really exciting. We've slowed our advance because of the COVID emergency, and it's very difficult to be active over there right now. But our decision to move to the US was that the US is a market that is maybe 12 times bigger than the UK. It isn't as advanced as the UK in any way at all. The UK is definitely the most advanced market in Europe and probably outside of Asia. And I would say probably even globally, it's one of the most advanced fintech, regtech markets. We're almost certainly, the UK is almost certainly the leader in fintech globally and definitely the leader in regtech. So the businesses that come out of the UK are great competitors. You know, we don't have a direct competitor, but we love the fact that we're driven forward. What we see in the US is most the prospects are on old technology.
Yes.
And what we offer them is a leap straight from old technology to the latest approach. And they see that as most of those prospects see that as a great advancement for them.
Because some of them scared, John? You know, because they've kind of done this for 20 years, I presume. So yeah, they're kind of scared. To...
I can't describe how old-fashioned most businesses are in the US. It just is so surprising because we were biased by our image of the West Coast.
Yeah.
All right. But forget the West Coast, really, because the West Coast is just like saying the UK, and the UK is bigger than California in terms of GDP. So we are really, the UK is really like the West Coast. But we're a whole country like it. They've got one area like it. And everywhere else is relatively far behind. However, that there lies the opportunity that they will, and they are all starting to upgrade. They're all starting to digitize their business. For instance, if you took the loans business, short-term loans business in the US, it's where the UK was 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it is still done face-to-face. It's still drive-through. It's at the mall, you know, or the shopping center, as we would call it. It isn't done online. There are businesses that do it online, and there are lots, and they do it well, but not most of them. So there is a real opportunity to help them advance, and it is such a big market. So that's what we saw. It's an expensive market, though, and people are paid a lot of money in the US, and they expect to be spoon-fed almost everything that they do. It's an almost uncompetitive market nowadays compared to some of the European markets. And you have to be very careful about where you set your business up. Now, we had a lot of help from Atlanta Metro, which are the inward, although they're a private organization, they're funded by companies like Coca-Cola. And we had a lot of help in setting our business up in Atlanta. Atlanta is becoming a tech alley, and the quality of recruit there, the quality of applicant, the people that you can hire are great. And of course, it's a hub, you know, with the airport at hand, so you can get to anywhere in the US. So it was really for that reason that we set up there. There were a lot of eyebrows raised. Why there? Why not the West Coast? Why not New York? Become quite parochial when you do that. Who knows whether we made the right decision? Only time will tell. But it's turning out to be, the right place. I think it will be a long journey for us, though, and I think it will gain momentum as we go through investment rounds in the future.
I think somebody else was describing it. It's like you can't go into the US like the Rolling Stones or the Beatles. You know, you've got to start and try and get there. It's great, honestly, to see like British companies sort of taking the leap, particularly with money laundering, terrorist financing being like a global issue. Businesses that are solving that sort of problem's global. It's not UK or Europe. So it's brilliant. Like, what do you think are the major challenges facing financial services firms over the next couple of years, or what's your view, I suppose, maybe as the development of your product, I suppose, to combat those?
Well, I think it's just, I think it's not just financial services. I think it's regulated businesses. So any business that's regulated for financial crime has a challenge in how they take the friction out of both onboarding those customers and then transacting with them in a way that keeps cost low, but keeps compliance high. And I do hear calls, you know, in the US as part of the COVID emergency, there were calls from a number of financial services businesses to government to lower the levels of regulation regulated businesses. In other words, perhaps we shouldn't do too much money laundering checks and KYC. And I kind of thought, well, you know, there's going to be a lot of cartels in Mexico listening to this. Oh, brilliant. Yeah, what a great idea. We'll sponsor some Facebook and Twitter ads for that. The reality is, actually, now's the time you need to do it more. But there is now technology like ours and, you know, other ways of doing things that enable you to have that highest level of compliance whilst actually onboarding the customer or transacting them in a way and with a speed that you've never done before. So you can have your cake and eat it. And I think the challenge is for organizations, young and old, and perhaps even some of the old ones and some of the tier one banks, to accept that their processes and technologies are just out of date, and they will never make a horse and cart go as fast as a Ferrari. You know, they're just never going to do it. And their inability to accept that has meant that the market is open for really nimble and efficient and agile challenges. And where we focus ourselves is enabling those fintechs and challengers to compete with those tier ones. And I can see the difficulty, the cultural difficulty with those tier one banks or tier one organizations just trying to make that decision, and the politics internally and the fiefdoms that are defended and the silos that are defended by the heads of each of those silos. What, you know, you can almost hear the arguments around the fraud team arguing with the financial crime team and the risk team and the credit team arguing with them all, and the onboarding and customer experience team saying we want to onboard all these people without your checks because you slow everything down, you prevent everything, our MQLs and cost per lead is just going over through the roof. They're not thinking in one unified way. And I think that's the challenge. It's that cultural change organizations need to go through to understand what's the destination they need to get to and then work back from there. rather than what do we do today and how can we just slightly change it? And and I think specifically in the States and some of the bigger organizations in Europe have that challenge, that cultural challenge. I think the more agile are challenges in all sectors, they get it. They get it's about doing the best compliance with the fastest onboarding or transacting. And they're the kind of people that we deal with. They're the kind of people that buy us today. But over time, we hope that, and we believe that the big guys will have to, and we already have a couple of tier one banks using us, they will have to start using technologies like ours.
Yeah.
So I think that's, it's a cultural challenge, in my humble opinion, to enable their customers to stay with them. Otherwise, they're going to start losing customers in droves.
Yeah. Well, the whole point and the whole way of complying with money laundering regulations is to know your customer. And if you know your customer better, you are quite likely to make more money out of your customer because you'll know what sort of products and stuff that they need, you know, so I totally get it. Moving forward, could you talk about, final question actually, could you talk about your goals for True Narrative over the short and the medium and long term? Are you getting investment or is it sort of buckle down and see what you've got in the UK and the US or what is it?
So we're self-funding. So we always have been. So the shareholders of True Narrative fund True Narrative, and we've already invested well over 7 million into the building of the platform and more in terms of the running of the business. And so we're probably coming to an inflection point in the next 18 months whereby we believe that we will become a global player in risk and financial crime. We're already a regionally big player. To become a global player, we may want to either take external investment or we may want to put more money in ourselves, significantly more money, or we may see a partnership with a bigger enterprise the way forward. If I'm honest, we haven't really decided. But at the moment, we're having probably our most successful period. We've been live for just over 2.5 years or just over 2 years. And the business has been trading for 3 years, incorporated a little bit longer, but really trading for 3 years. We took close to 18 months to build version one of the platform. And we continue to build it, we're not in maintenance mode by any means. We keep building out the platform and its capability. And now it's very much an enterprise platform, deep and wide. And we have some great plans around the product roadmap of how much deeper we're going to go and how much wider. But we will always stick to our knitting, which is risk and financial crime. And and I think it's, over the next 18 months, it's about how we take that message globally. But at the moment, it's very, very focused on the UK, the US, and near close Europe, and continuing to exploit that market because they are big markets.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, listen, John, thanks very much for joining me today. It's always a pleasure to see like British companies expanding, doing well. And also it's refreshing that you haven't had sort of external funding and you're along that track. You're doing something slightly different. You're definitely one of the most interesting sort of financial crime workflow management pieces that you'll see out there. Next week, we're speaking to Jenny Himberg-Wild, who is head of FinTech and PSPs at Barclays Bank. So listen, John, thanks very much. We'll see you all next week.
Thanks, Phil. Great to talk to you.